Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right, okay, everyone. Red Men TV, Liverpool podcast.
Goodness. Radio.
Red Men Radio. Yeah, so we've got a question to kick us off, Chris. Liam Smith, YNWA. How would you introduce Coutinho back into the team? Not if you were Klopp, but if you were handling the situation. Awkward one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I maybe would have actually liked a little bit of time to prepare on this one.
So, okay, let me present a situation to you. Let's see if I can just get the juices going.
Okay.
Someone that's really, really massively done your head in at some point during the week. Sorry, Tom. They've made your life exceedingly difficult, and you've not seen them for weeks and weeks, and then they just walk in right in your face. And what's the first thing that you say to them?
Hi, mate, you're right.
Fuck. Hi, Philip.
Probably give him a fake hug.
Yeah.
Do the hand thing, the arm around the back. It's how I greet everybody.
And then just like make loads of really passive aggressive comments around them for the week or two.
It's probably about right, isn't it?
Yeah, I really like... Hey, lads, how's it going? Well, I'm going to pick the team because I really like lads who are very tall and physically broad. Oh, hi, Phil.
It's either that or push them off a really high building.
Argentinians are great, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Portuguese is a bit of a shit language. Isn't English and German better? But seriously, I mean, I've suggested a few of these on the lines and I don't want to... keep repeating myself, but I will. If it was up to me, I would just... I'll give you an example of this and to tangentially analogize it slightly. So I used to work in a pub in Sheffield, which mm-hmm. you well know, but the listeners may not. There was a couple who ran that place for a while, and we had a...
Would you put them in the back room of this pub? Is it the pub that was split into the nice people?
Yeah, anyone who knows that has ever been to the Broadfield on in Nether Edge in Sheffield will know this pub. It's probably nicer these days, but it was a hell. Anyway, there was a Scouse landlord landlady combo, and the landlord, he was just a brute. He was a barrel of a man. He used to be a boxer. He used to be in the army. So Scottish warfare. He was just a nasty piece of work. Lovely fella when he was sound, but if he turned on you, he'd just batter you. That's just his personality. Now my best mate at the time, it was their leaving due, and we would be drinking for 3 days. Solid, and at the end of it, he just did something to wind him up, and he ended up getting swung for and all kinds. And we ended up like everyone was fleeing the pub. People, the DJ was grabbing his decks and running down the street and all this kind of stuff. The next day was their actual leaving day, and I wondered what my mate would do because we'd all had a great couple of years working for them and stuff. And I was like, you should just swear, you should, I don't know, apologize to him, whatever. And he walked in, and he just went, all right. A good job, you did it like a shit house in it, and he just fucking burst out laughing, and it was like complete because he just decided he was just going to face it the way that he would face it. So you know, I think there's something to Jurgen Klopp or me in this situation where I would just go and just I'd put it on Coutinho's toes and see how he deals with it. You know what I mean? So I'd have the first team sat there in Barcelona Coutinho kits when he walks in on the first day, and all point and laugh at him and give him a round of applause or whatever, something like that. That's like that. If he's got a sense of humour, he'll just fucking laugh and it'll diffuse the whole thing. But if he hasn't, he's a massive fanny, and I'd boot him off to the under-23s if he started crying.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, that's the type of thing, I suppose, that would be good, isn't it? I don't know. I can't think of anything better than that, mate, to be honest with you. I'd be ribbing him something chronic. I think that's what it comes down to, isn't it? You have to, because you're reintroducing him to a gang of lads, aren't you, essentially? And lads are lads are lads across the board. Like, it doesn't matter where they come from and stuff like that. I mean, whether it's a game of Pro Evo and everyone plays Barcelona against him, whatever it is, it's got to involve Barcelona. Yeah. Like,
I would be replacing an item of his possessions each day with a Barcelona branded item of possession.
I'm not sure stealing's the right way to go, but go on.
No, fuck off. I mean, this is not Wimbledon. This is not us setting fire to his clothes in the car park, which I think would be a reasonable response. This is like, just because I just draw it out till it's basically bullying is what I'm talking about. Because I want us to bully Phil Coutinho, and so like swap one of his socks for a Barcelona sock, so he's got an odd Barcelona sock, and then he'll deal with that. Then swap his deodorant out for Barcelona deodorant. Then swap his boxies out the next day. Then swap his t-shirt, and just build it up over and over again to the point where, you know, he's just like, oh my god! And then you go, all right, fair play. Welcome back,
to Liverpool.
Exactly that. Tea. So we're winging this week, Chris. I think people might think you don't wing it every week. Sometimes we plan a little bit ahead. You've had some interesting thoughts with regards to, I think this is kind of on the back of the transfer window, and obviously with the Champions League looming as well. You got a piece of information based on net spend?
Yeah, based on net spend. So basically, I stumbled across an article. I was doing research for another Red Men show. We didn't get to use it, and I thought, well, you know what, it's really interesting stuff. I think we should talk about this. And it was an article that was done online, and it was about the 5 years net spend of all the Champions League clubs this season.
All
so every 32 of the teams who are in the Champions League, what their net spend has been over the 5 years. And what was really irritating about it, first and foremost, is it was a slideshow. And normally I wouldn't persist and carry on and look at that slideshow, but I actually was really interested in the outcome. So and by the time I got to the 25th highest spenders, the 7th lowest spenders, my interest had peaked, because it was Dortmund, who had only spent £32 million net over the last 5 years. Had made a profit of £32 million. And it was just like, wow, okay, we talk so much about net spenders, football fans, because of Mo from Arsenal Fan TV, essentially. But no, it's been going on for a long time now, and about how much Liverpool are spending and all this type of stuff. And I thought, Dortmund have made £32 million profit. Atletico Madrid have made £21 million in profit. Spurs, £5 million in profit. Monaco, £13 million in profit. Mm-hmm. And we're obsessed with frigging outgoings.
Yeah.
We're not obsessed with our squads.
Yeah.
We're obsessed with how much it costs.
Yeah.
And isn't that all wrong?
Yeah, I mean, there's loads of interesting stuff written in it, because like Paul Tompkins does a big thing on the we're more important on wage spend than transfer spend. What I guess, Chris, the obvious counter-argument to all this is, because you could go, I think the simple line of that is going, well, frigging hell, Atletico Madrid have made money in the last five years on transfers. Friggin' Sevilla have made £140 million. In that 5 years.
Three Europa Leagues.
Exactly. Now the thing is it's where the obvious argument to this, can I remember you put a similar argument, not a similar argument, but an argument out about whether Man City fans were going to cry conspiracy theory about Alexis Sanchez bids, and a lot, and the natural response is, but look at the success that City have. And this is the natural response here, because Liverpool have spent a lot of money, nowhere near the top teams, but also nowhere near the profit made by other teams. How does it relate in terms of success? Well, is there a correlation between spending a shit ton of money? Is what I'm
not really, not for money. Me. I think, look, the top spenders in the Champions League clubs are Manchester City. They've spent a net spend of £633 million. And what that's got them is two Premier League titles, essentially, in the last 5 years. It's got them a group stage, a round of 16, three times, and a semi-final appearance.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Well, all right, sounds. They've spent the most, £633 million. What have Madrid spent? £66 million in 5 years in net spend. They've got three wins and two semi-final appearances. You know, what are the other winners? Barcelona, £226 million, only £76 million more spent than Liverpool. They've got semi-finals, quarters, winners, quarters, quarters. You know what I mean? And that's a lot of money for what they've achieved. PSG are the third highest spend team. United are the second highest spend team. They've not even been in the Champions League until last season, and then 2 seasons ago, and then they won the Europa League. So there's no real correlation between spending loads of money and winning Champions Leagues. Real Madrid proved that.
Or more importantly as well, it's there's no shame in making money in a transfer window. Now, it's relative, of course, isn't it? Because, as you say, Sevilla have got those Europa Leagues, but I wouldn't consider Sevilla as a... Maybe this is our entitlement coming out again and the hubris or whatever. I wouldn't want to be Sevilla. I mean, we would probably be a better run club if we actually had a similar level of success of Sevilla over the last 5 years. But, you know, Sevilla are never going to win La Liga.
No.
Is the issue with that? But as you say, you can't argue the
Atletico Madrid well. Have won La Liga in this period, you know, and they've finished runners up. Ultimately, they've not done it, but the difference in spend is £650 million between Manchester City and Atletico Madrid. And Atletico Madrid have got to two Champions League finals, and Madrid haven't got past City haven't got past the semis.
Yeah.
So listen, we can talk all we want about how much you need to spend in each individual transfer window. It doesn't matter how much you spend. Getting the right players is what Liverpool need to focus on, because we can't compete with Manchester City.
Yeah.
So how do we win? How do Liverpool win Manchester City? They pick the right players for that club and the right manager. And it looks like right now we've got the right manager.
Yeah.
And we'll find out whether we're getting the right players in the future. But we won't find out on deadline day whether we've got the right players.
Yeah.
We'll find out after a year or two. Because after 5 years, I can say Atletico Madrid have got the right players for the right fees for them.
Why do you think there's an obsession with the big spends, the big money, the big names, the big players?
Blackburn Rovers. Because Blackburn Rovers started it all.
Yeah.
You know, they bought the Premier League title. They were the first team to win the Premier League title based on money.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a misconception that that's the way that you have to win the Premier League, and it wasn't. And it probably was right until maybe Leicester proved it wrong, that you don't have to do it. There is such a fascination with being able to spend loads and loads of money.
Yeah.
And I think now football teams seem to be on a bit of an even keel when it comes to the Premier League. You know, there are teams like Watford and your Leicesters, and everybody's got so much money, haven't they? That it's now about picking the right players and not picking the players that cost loads of money, because you can look down it. You know, you've talked about it many times over the years. Paul Tonkin says there's a 50% chance of getting a transfer right.
Yeah.
It's about beating the odds.
Yeah.
And that's Moneyball, unfortunately. And people don't like to think that their club's a Moneyball club. Would you have said, if I had not showed you this, that Atletico Madrid was a Moneyball club? Dortmund,
a bad example. But yeah, to be honest, I think they're probably the two prime examples of where you... They're the ones that are probably convincing owners around. Well,
would you have said that Real Madrid have spent a lower net spend than us?
No, not at all. I'd have thought Real Madrid would have been bang up alongside City, Man United, PSG, Barcelona, if I'm honest. Now, we've talked about this, and I think it's probably where they are. Now, this is weird, because this should be true of those other clubs as well. So it's maybe not an airtight argument, is that they're very good at maintaining value of players and selling those players on, which is where they've probably maintained. And having Cristiano Ronaldo for the last, 7 years or whatever they've had, does make a massive difference. And to be fair as well, they went out that summer and they bought Ronaldo, Benzema and Kaká. And yeah, Kaká didn't work out, but they've kept Ronaldo and Benzema for that whole time has helped. And that, you pointed out, they're able to sell Morata for 70 million quid. Ridiculous. But it's tough. And there's obviously, you're right, it's interesting. It's not conclusive, but it's interesting.
There's nothing conclusive in football, because it never ends.
No.
So what's right 1 week might be wrong the next, and season by season.
But it does show, yeah. And for where Liverpool are, but the thing that's always interesting in this, and we know this, and this is where Liverpool always tend to fall. In the Premier League, we've got the fourth highest
out of the five Champions League clubs.
Fourth highest. Let's not forget net spend in the league over the last 5 years. So when you look at Arsenal's at 14.3 million,
that was in one season.
No, this is this. Sorry, this is this season. Okay, sorry, I apologise then. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what that was. But inevitably, Liverpool are always fourth or fifth in the Premier League.
Eighth in the Deloitte money table.
Yeah.
Fifth of the English club. So we're in a very competitive league. And to get into the Champions League, we need to beat out clubs who are spending more. That's the real problem here, is that, you know, there's nobody spending more than 66 million, I'd guess, in Spain than Real Madrid's over 5 years.
Where do you feel then that the Coutinho decision, as in to keep him in the face of being offered ludicrous money, falls into our approach here? Because that doesn't say to me we're trying to do what Atletico do and what Sevilla do, because Atletico take the money when it's there for their stars and they move on.
Listen, there's so much been written and so much been said about the Phil Coutinho deal, but for me, this is my opinion now, and you know, not those of Red Men TV. I know that, you know, Spain could have signed players a day later, and I just wonder whether if we'd have signed Lamar and Van Dijk, whether Coutinho would have gone a day after deadline day. Mm-hmm. And that for me is probably where I feel, and I truly believe that might have happened. Yeah. I could have been completely wrong. You know, and the likelihood is because Liverpool said all summer long that they're not taking the money,
They're
not this, they're not that, and maybe they just decided that they had to make a stand to Barcelona.
On an aside, I mean, I guess the fact we've talked about this on this podcast on the website, which is great to have. By the way, if you're enjoying the free podcast and you want more, we do 5 a week on theredmentv.com, which are all boss and exclusive and all kinds of different cool stuff. A lot of transfer window roundup on there, which is absolutely excellent. Is it answering to itself the fact that the football club have said definitively he's not for sale? They would never change it, you know, and take him with the word, they were never planning on selling Coutinho because their stance unequivocal. The fact that you still had that belief, is that the reason in and of itself why they've done
maybe
this?
So because they've got to stop that, haven't they? They've got to make Liverpool and the owners have to make people believe that when they say something they mean something, and that's not just in player sales. That's in negotiations of transfers in. Mm-hmm. You know, if you turn around to somebody like Barcelona did and go, "This is our last bid," and then a day later you're going, "This is our last bid, lads," you don't believe them. So how much are you going to keep negotiating and driving the price up? Equally, if Liverpool are known, and John W. Henry and Michael Edwards and everyone are known to be men of their words, then you say, "This is our last bid," you get that little bit level of respect that the team might just go, we might have to accept it because we can't push this price any higher.
It reminds me the way we've handled this, though. It's like, you know, when you're walking down the street, say if you're in Turkey or whatever, they're very big on the haggling side of things. We're passing, you want? I can't stand that. I think things have a value, and then I'll pay that. But you go, you know, I know you'll just happily chuck the price up at the end. But it's
that's eBay.
When you don't, it's like, "I don't want your watch, mate." Okay, well, you can have it for 10. No, I'm genuinely not interested in your watch. "Oh, I see the game you're playing." 5. "No, mate,
you could give me it for free and I'm going to hand it back to you."
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's where Barcelona got into it. They're like, "Oh, Liverpool, you're playing hardball, huh?" And they go, "No, seriously, not interested." And they go, "Oh, we know your game, Liverpool. Another 20 million. No, seriously, okay." And so on and so forth, yeah. which is, must have been hilarious. I like the fact that we sent like Ian Rush.
Brilliant. And he still has to tell them now. Yeah. I'm Ian Rush. I don't do transfers, mate. I do mustaches.
Can I just ask?
That's it.
Yeah, not even anymore, Chris.
No, it's sad, isn't it?
Just Liverpool, I'd like to offer us up for that. We would have had so much fun with Barcelona. So if this situation arises, Liverpool, send us as your negotiation or your non-negotiation ambassadors.
I'm up for that.
We're applying for that role right now.
I'll give you that for free.
Yeah, absolutely. There we go. No. Yeah, we'll do it for free. We'll do it for free. Just flights and accommodation.
Ryanair's fine. We don't even want the front row.
No, I'd like the extra legroom seats if it's all the same.
Prima donna.
Leggy donna. You
just called yourself Leggy Donna.
Yeah.
I love it. Amazing. That's the worst thing you've ever called yourself.
It's not.
What is?
I've got no idea. I'm very self-deprecating normally, Chris.
Bullshit! Yeah. Tom's laughing, so he knows I'm right. Leggy Donna.
Yeah. Anyway,
there was I can think of one leggy Donna, and that was Donna Day. That girl had legs.
Donna Day was a leggy Donna. And I had a leggy Donna once. It was a kebab that I found on the side of my bed 2 days later.
Do you know what I do for Phil Coutinho? I get into his house and put a fish behind his radiator because that's always fun.
Yeah,
because it just stinks
underneath his mattress.
Because you can find that too easy. No one thinks of the fish behind the radiator.
Yeah.
So if you're in a house that you've leased and you're not happy with your landlord, that's what you need to do.
I remember this going back years when we were working in the tavern together, and there was a really bad smell in the restaurant, and I was you and the chef, and you were both smokers at the time, and I used to always say you lose your smell and your taste when you're a smoker, and I was going, lad, it really smells, and you're going, it's not, and you like I was making it up, and I was going, no, look, you walk to this area and it smells, you walk away, it doesn't smell. So I started to narrow it down. He says, but no, definitely not, no, it's fine, I can't smell anything. Can you smell anything? No, it was like the blind leading the blind, the smell blind, and eventually, yeah, we pried up. I was like, no, look, pried up. A panel, and there was a very, very, very dead
decomposing.
Yeah, within the traps. Just to clarify that, that's what they're there for. But yeah, it was
very dead and very smelly.
So that was her.
What were we talking about?
Leggy Donna's. Phil Coutinho, a radiator mackerel. Yeah, so I think that's very much a possibility. But yeah, no, but it makes you wonder though, like 140 million. Now, logic would dictate that transfer fees don't decrease. You know, and if I was looking at Phil Coutinho's return in terms of his goals and assists, and look, he's just gotten better season on season. He's actually getting more for less minutes on the pitch at this point, so he's getting better and better and better. It stands to reason that, you know, he's gonna have a better season this year, so his value could increase. But it's still a massive gamble to take for that amount of money. You know, there's a very realistic chance we may never get offered that again for Phil. Because let's be honest, he was maybe a £50 million player a year before.
Mm.
To become a €150 million player in the space of 12 months when he wasn't that much better on the pitch.
No, but it's kind of... If he's the right piece, this kind of goes back to what I was saying in the beginning. If he's the right piece for Barcelona's puzzle, then they'll pay.
Piece.
Okay, they'll pay that. fortunately, maybe for us. I can't see how he's ever worth €150 million. I just can't see. Even in an inflated market, he's not the second best player. Obviously, it doesn't quite work like that, but Neymar blew the transfer. Neymar's the only player that's gone for over 100 million, isn't he?
Let's say yes.
I think he is. I think he is. I think, you know, Pogba wasn't 100 million. Lukaku wasn't 100 million. Neymar essentially nearly doubled everybody else. And yet, so Coutinho's 1.5 times everybody else And that's mental because he's still not the finished article.
If you're buying
the finished article, I could understand it, but you're not.
Well, this is why, because all the talk was Barca weren't even interested in him this summer. So I was very relaxed about this going into the summer because the talk was they were looking ahead for someone to start to replace Iniesta. So they're looking for that attacking mid, like the, you know, skillful, dribbly, creative, blah, blah, blah. And Coutinho was on the radar, but didn't feel he was there. Now, I had this strong suspicion what was going to happen this season was we were going to play him in that position and then they were going to go, wow, and then they were going to come in. But that's where it might play into Liverpool's hands to some extent. If Klopp goes with the decision, if he's able to you know, get over it and put him in the team or whatever, that Coutinho could. That's why I think he might prove his worth, because Iniesta is so hard to replace and he's so good. Whereas Coutinho can do... Pull the strings from that midfield position and show that he can get goals. It's like Iniesta doesn't score loads of goals, but if Coutinho can prove that he can score goals and provide the ammunition as well, then maybe and Barcelona with a year down the line with Iniesta, I don't even know how long Iniesta's got left on his contract. He'd have a feeling it might well be coming up, but that might be, that's one of those situations that might play into our hands. Or equally, Dembele's just terrible. He doesn't adapt. It's come too much too soon for him. And it puts a bit more pressure on Barcelona. And now we're in a position where we've already turned down this amount of money for Phil.
What are you paying?
Exactly. It might work out for us. But all of this is dependent on him having a really good season.
The thing is, you put that lad on the football field and he'll play well.
I hope so. I genuinely hope that's the case. I worry that he has a slight similarity to Raheem Sterling in that neither of those, they were both handed the full responsibility of Liverpool and Liverpool fans' happiness too soon in their careers, but neither of them particularly thrived under that pressure.
Maybe so, but he's not the focal point of this team now, is he? You know, Sadio Mane is the main man in this football team, and I think everybody realises that, you know, from a focal point, certainly. You've got Salah on one side, Mane on the other, and Coutinho becomes one of the rotation of midfielders this season.
Yeah.
Horses for courses type of a thing. When do you play him? How are you going to play him? And that could work in our benefit as well, you know, picking his games and choosing those games and giving him the best platform to perform could drive his price higher up.
Yeah. Have you got anything you'd like to suggest for putting in the bin this week and putting you on the spot? Is it as simple as fake back injuries?
Fake back injuries. It's a good shout. I think something needs to be done about the transfer window, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
You know, it's an absolute joke. Like, did you see that Bleacher Report video that thing he put on the WhatsApp group?
I didn't watch this. The one about
Sheffield United.
Yeah.
And the stuff that they went through on deadline day, and it's just like they had a camera following him around, and you know, Jerome Sinclair was supposed to be going there, and he was sat in a train station waiting to get a train, and he never ended up getting the train, and agents adding £1 million onto someone's fee of 200,000, and you know, the deals had been agreed at 200,000, and I can't remember the guy's name, I forget it, and then the agent's gone, I know you've agreed that, but we want 1.2 now.
Jerome Sinclair, was it?
No, Jerome? It wasn't Jerome's agent for the 1.2 million. It was somebody else, I think, and stuff like that. And you're like, what? The deal's been agreed, and now the agent's saying, I want £1 million to push this deal through, and stuff like that. And you're thinking, how is the game and the money leaving football? Because, you know, ultimately, the whole aim of these elite clubs for me in England is you keep the money in the clubs, you don't siphon off money to go to agents and money leaves football. It should all be there.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a big fucking pot that people have a share of at a certain time. And like, you sell players and you get more money. Well, you sell players and you don't even get the full worth of the frigging player.
Yeah.
I don't understand how agents have got such a hand in this game. And, you know, it's like buying local. I like to buy stuff from independent restaurants if I've got a choice over brands, because I know that the money's staying in the city. I know that the money's going to people who work in this city and stuff like that, whereas in chains just getting siphoned off and going elsewhere.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what football's got, and it's a massive problem. And at deadline day, and the deadline itself just increases the panic, and people end up spending over the odds because of this, and the money's leaving the game, and that's bad.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's it. The deadline day is there. Deadline day as it is needs to get in the bin, because we've covered pretty much every deadline day for the last 4 or 5 years now, you know, in various forms, whether it was us doing the massive live streams off our own back, or doing working with Ball Street, or doing whatever. And this was the one that should have been the one, you know, with all the hype and everything that was built up. And it just proved once again that we're all just massive chumps for fucking buying into it, because it just, business, interesting and good business doesn't happen on deadline day. And I'm pretty certain the Oxlade-Chamberlain stuff was only announced a bit later, just for the PR of having Liverpool have a thing, because that was all done and dusted the night before.
You know what? I'm not going to take credit for this. It's something Si said to me on the day, and I don't think he brought it up on the show he was on before. Had we found out that Virgil van Dijk wasn't going to happen at 9 a.m, and had we found out that Thomas Amar wasn't going to happen at 10 a.m, and we signed Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain at 10 p.m, I wonder how Liverpool fans would view that window. But the fact is, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlin almost underwhelmed us for him being the first one of the day.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, you always talked about it, Ricky Lambert being the first signing of the summer fucked us a couple of years ago. And isn't it funny how a few hours difference can make everything to your mindset.
Yeah, exactly. Like if we've been rushing that through right at the end, and like that came out,
it's a win.
That exactly, we'd all just go.
You save Naby Keita until 1 hour before deadline day. The whole window's a fucking win.
It's the equivalent of the last minute equaliser. Yeah. To save yourself a point.
Still a fucking draw.
Exactly. You know, whereas if you could see the goal, it's all time. You're right. Timing is everything in these things, because there are times when you celebrate one all draws, and the times when you fucking think, well, what's the worst thing that's ever happened to your life? And it is just a matter of time. And exactly. So yeah, the deadline day as is needs to get in the bin. And I think the thing is, we talked about this maybe last week, and it's been a general conversation, but if you move that a week before the window, before the league season starts, it's at least interesting stuff's happening in that period. Like I said, maybe it means that deadline day will just, that last couple of days will be boring again. But I just think there's more time to focus on it because you're not focusing on preparation, you know what I mean, in exactly the same way that you are once the season's already begun and all that kind of stuff. Even players aren't going off an international duty.
I said like last week that I don't mind when it is, right? Having lived through another one, I kind of do. But here's the thing. If you just changed it and tweaked it slightly such that you can only make one signing on deadline day, and maybe like you can make as many signings as you want through this period, you can make one in this week and then one a day in the lead up to deadline day. That could be, I don't know whether Sky'd fucking love it, first of all, because the interest would peak for 7 days instead of one. But you just make your one sign, I could switch off for the rest of the fucking day. If we'd made Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain at 10 a.m.,
yeah.
I could just switch off.
Yeah.
I'm done. See you later. I'm home. Bye. Instead of sitting up till 12:30 doing fucking podcasts, review shows.
Absolutely fair play. I'm stalling for time. I asked for questions on the podcast, and then it was at the start of this morning. And Ross's favourite had 700 tweets in the interim, so bear with me just a moment. While I dig them all out, but yeah, it'd be lovely just to do something better, something more interesting. It's all gone, all the interest gone. Now you don't even have like fans crowding around outside the things anymore.
Did you see the Liverpool report of a Sky was inside Melbourne?
Yeah, exactly. This is the point. They've done this for a couple. This is why it's all complicit. It's why it's too much. They're too in with the clubs. Like they've probably made it part of the Sky television agreement that they have to give them a space inside the training ground, however. Because I understand no one needs to see purple dildos being shoved in reporters' ears, and that's by no one needs to mean. Come on, we still need to see more of that. That was all part of the fun and part of the hysteria of deadline day, and that was what we haven't even got that anymore. And now it's just. It's just a bunch of people stood at fucking television screens or stood against walls out somewhere. They don't need to be there. They could be doing that by fucking Skype, you know what I mean, or on a green screen. It makes no sense. There's no fun left in deadline day anymore, the real deadline day. We still do the fun on deadline day, but it is it's just bollocks and stressful and as proved by us getting the Ryan Babel rumour, creating a Ryan Babel transfer rumour, it just proves that we're all absolute bad meffs when it comes to it as well, and deadline day makes idiots of all of us. So all of that, everything we covered there, including back injuries, need to get in the fucking bin. Okay, some questions then. Lord Neen, Kesneen, what's the best Rocky movie? Have you watched the Rocky movies?
Yeah, I always thought 4.
Yes, that's the correct answer. Yeah, it's not. The first one's the best one because it's a really good film.
But does it have a really unbeatable Russian?
No, of course it doesn't.
So it's not.
No, 4 is my favourite because I've seen it 700 times and I still get stuff out of it. And it's got all that, if he dies, he dies. And, you know, Drago! And all that kind of stuff. It's great. It's a fantastic film. And it's got the best soundtrack.
Has it?
It has. No Easy Way Out. It's electro synth greatness. Listen to that. If you haven't listened to the Rocky IV album, I highly recommend it.
Put that on my to-do list.
Yeah, honestly, I've probably played so much for it. It's a beast.
A beast? I've not heard you say that in a
absolutely.
Long time. Mate.
It's perfect for running along beaches.
That was a Gareth Eaton thing. That's where that came from.
I don't know who that is. Connor Llewellyn. I think everyone enjoyed a lot of our wrestle talk from last week, so we've had a few similar questions. Your top three WWF... And this is slashy, but it was pointless. Wrestlers of all time.
Heartbreak Kid, Triple H, and The Rock.
Wow, solid. Solid shows. I think I did Attitude Era once on my channel. It's probably Bret Hart.
Oh, fuck's sakes.
Yeah, man. Tough. So tough. I like loads of wrestlers. It can't not be The Rock, can it? Because he's just brilliant. And I'm going to throw a random one in there of, like, let's say Jeff Hardy.
Okay, absolutely.
I loved him. Like, but it could be a Jeff Hardy or a Rob Van Dam.
The thing is, I picked two fellas there in Heartbreak Kid and Triple H. There's nothing wrong with
that. Should have just gone China as the third one.
And picked the three fellas, yeah.
God rest the soul, by the way.
So, I didn't know she was dead. Heartbreak Kid, Triple H, they. I don't know whether you still watch wrestling now or if you're listening, you still watch wrestling now. They're probably tainted a little bit because they got a little bit shit. And by a little bit shit, I mean a lot of shit. But then when they were fucking in their prime, were absolutely superb. And, you know, if I could have a fourth, it would absolutely be Bret Hart.
Okay.
Pink tights.
Callan, Brewster Callan, Who would win a WWF Royal Rumble if all the Liverpool players were involved?
I can't see past Emre Can playing some kind of, is his name Rusev character or something like that? Do you know what I mean? Is that his name?
I could see
he's playing one of those Americans playing a Russian is what Emre Can would be. Yeah. I think, I don't know whether he'd win, but I just wanted to get that in there.
Clear house with a German flag and to wind everyone up. Yeah. If it was a British audience, you'd have all like all the racist Brits who have been singing, you know, German bomber songs and all that kind of stuff getting cleaned out and going, boo. I could see him being the one who gets flipped over the top rope but hangs on.
Oh yeah,
and pulls himself back up around again, and when someone else thinks, like Jordan Henderson thinks he's won, and he celebrates, and then Emre clocks him in the back of the head and knocks him out.
Other than that, in the Liverpool squad, I mean, we talked about it last week, and I just don't think there's that many really great wrestlers in our squad. And maybe that's a failing on Klopp's part.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure.
Here's the thing, though, about a Royal Rumble, high flyers don't do well.
No.
So Mane and Salah, who are now as high flyers in that regard, I don't think they'd fare
It'd be
very
great
well
to see Moreno get chucked over the
Moreno
top
Moreno would get full-on gorilla-pressed over the top rope by Matip.
There's a couple of players there. I mean, Grujic is one of the ones that I thought could handle himself big time. Like,
yeah.
I don't think he's quite ready for a Royal Rumble win just
yet.
I think maybe like a Fatal 4-Way or something like that he could probably handle himself in.
Who's then the character in the Royal Rumble that needs like four people to eliminate him and inevitably gets his arms tangled in the ropes and they try to flip him over?
It feels like Milner.
I think he's too small. This is like an Andre it's a giant type. It's probably going to have to be... Grujic is actually an interesting shout for that. I think he'd be
Mignolet's
tough to
tall, isn't he? Like, as well.
He's just not that interesting, is he?
I know.
Mignolet's with the kind of guy who would run in and he would charge full tilt and someone would just barrel him straight over the other side as he came in. Really hit my elbow on my chair.
Did you? Are you okay? Really you're fine. Lift your elbow up. Let's see it.
I'm not okay.
He's not okay.
I could see.
If we had a Red Men TV flag, we would be turning it upside down right now.
God, in memory. RIP Paul's elbow. Pray for Paul's elbow. Who are the kind of guys who would do the Road Dog and the Billy Gunn stuff of like go hiding under the top rope and clinging on?
Moreno. Absolutely.
I could see maybe a little. I'm thinking Alana might be up for that. Oh my God! Sorry, distraction. I put it in the group. Did you see the video of John Flanagan scaring Adam Lallana?
No.
Oh, what did you watch it? What is wrong with you as human beings? Last night, there's a video and it must be off Flano's Snapchat. And Lallana walks into the room and he goes, rah! And Lallana shits himself. Oh my God, it's classic. It's not great radio. Maybe the noise would be worthwhile. Just looking through again, Markovic is another one where I think he'd come in as like number three. And get thrown straight out. Yeah, I could see a Karius doing like Karius a Rick Model Martel
like
thing and having a good
boy,
he'd have a
Mr.
good
perfect type a good of innings, a like, career, I think.
Yeah. Other than that, I'm not sure who else would be. I think Danny Ings would have a good rumble. I think he's just got that steady. I mean, unless he got badly injured really early on, which is par for the course. I think he could do a job.
If you had to pick anyone to do the Undertaker's patented completely dead,
pop back up. It's probably Markovic, isn't it? Because he just won't.
Oh, come on!
He just won't die, Chris.
I think Matip.
No. Every time it's like the horror, it's like the movie horror villain that keeps coming back. Lazar Markovic is this year the new Alberto Aquilani in that regard, isn't he? He's gone. It's fine. Oh no, he's back. Give the man a squad number. Oh my God. Print some name and numbers up. Get his training gear out again. Again, Matip just because he's a big bastard, isn't it? But then Danny Ward as well is a big fella, didn't he?
Yeah. I feel like Ward would be one of the ones who'd wear a mask like Kane. I don't know why. I don't think he's particularly hideous to look at, whereas the rest of
us. People who watch the YouTube channel and the website, of course, Chris does the starting 11. We've just redone a lot of the players for the starting 11. Danny Ward, this is something for you to watch out and check out on Thursday. I think you're doing this. You'll be doing this live. Danny Ward, if you can go in the comments and talk to Chris, get him to show you Danny Ward, his picture. He's full on, got guy liner on.
Has he?
He looks very Pirates of the Caribbean. Chris is off. If you want to watch the video version of this podcast, you can. In fact, Chris, do us a favour. Actually, say what for the video because you'll never remember to do it on the starting 11. for the people watching the video version right now, here's that is our card for Danny Ward. I'm not sure how in focus that's going to be. Go on, Tom. Do the business. I'm just gonna just do some hygiene while I'm here. As we say, if you enjoy the free podcasts that we do, obviously we've got the build up podcast and we've got this as well, which is just generally chatting Liverpool stuff. If you want more stuff, as I say, 5 exclusive podcasts every single week, which is 20 odd a month, depending on how long the month is. £5 a month. It's free for the first month. You can come and check it out. There's also loads of extra video content, exclusive interviews, and all that kind of stuff. Again, on the revamped theredmentv.com. As ever, all the free stuff that we do is supported by the people who support us on that website. So if you want to get involved, you want to help Red Men TV be a thing, and like Chris, support local businesses, keep the money in Liverpool, then by all means do go over to theredmentv.com and sign up. It would be great, and all feedback's recommended. What also I recommend is leaving a 5-star review on the podcast, if you would be so kind. iTunes always helps with the old algorithm, and anywhere you listen to it as well, whether it's Acast or Stitcher or Podbean.
Next week.
Chris, that was terrific. I think we'll probably wrap that up there. You were great.
And you too. Bro.
Thanks. Weird. Well, I'm a leggy donna, after all.
You're not the best leggy donna.
But I am at best the second best.
I've been racking my brain thinking of others. I can't. I
can't think of any other
donnas.
It's
a name that's really died out,
it
has got,
it did die out in the 90s, if it ever really was alive in the 90s. If you leave some donna suggestions,
who do you think was the
tweet
best
at the Red Men TV
big breakfast presenter for young lads?
Ooh, Kelly Brook.
Shout. I always like
the correct answer.
I don't know. It depends what you like.
If you like the fittest girl that England's ever created, then yeah. If not, then what's your suggestion?
I like Denise Van Outen,
Denise Van Outen, I think I could have a better laugh all round with Denise Van Outen. But I think Alice Cooper once said about Kelly Brook was that's a very pleasant way to wake up in the morning, and I fully agree. But yeah, brilliant. Let us know your favourite Big Breakfast presenter, if you even remember. Tom, do you know what the Big Breakfast was? No, Tom.
What was the eggs
know.
Game? No idea. Was it an eggs game?
What are you talking about?
That's right, it was on the Big Breakfast.
Okay, great. But yeah, let us know anything you want to talk about. And obviously, as ever, you can tweet us at the Red Men TV with stuff and reactions to stuff. But otherwise, get on the redmentv.com. It's boss, and you will be too if you go there. Walk on.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.